Types are fascinating patterns that are best discovered holistically.
Welcome to Beyond Personality Types, the original InterStrengths podcast. Every week, we provide you with the better ways to use and talk about personality theories. I am your host, Olivier Caudron, a self-discovery facilitator. With me is Dr. Linda Behrens, internationally renowned for her innovative typology approach. Come with us beyond the indicator results to rethink what you know about personality types.
If I say I'm an INTP, then you have some understanding of what that means. Somebody else has an understanding of what that means. And then they make assumptions about that, about my behavior.
Are we doing more harm than good by oversimplifying our complex natures into four-letter personality types? Can there be more depth in saying I have preferences for INTP rather than I am an INTP? Hello, and thank you for tuning in. The present episode is the first part of a two-episode series on properly addressing type. Today, we delve into the significance of transitioning from saying I am or you are to I have a preference for, you have a preference for. Linda will explain why avoiding static labels like INTP or ESFJ is crucial. We examine the historical context, potential psychological consequences, and benefits of this approach. This discussion will lead us to the fascinating concept of patterns that shape our personalities and an understanding of the potential pitfalls of labeling. Let's dive into part one of our journey toward another way to address types. When someone asks you who you are, normally you answer, I am Olivier, for instance. We use the verb to be to identify ourselves and others. In the personality types world, it sounds logical to say I am an INFJ, an Enneagram 2. Yet, using the verb to be might have unexpected consequences on several levels. Why is it necessary to switch our ways to announce a personality? From what consequences does this protect us? Please, Linda, tell us how you realized the importance of changing our way to address personality types.
Oh, wow. It was a long time ago. I think in like 1995, there was a conference in Newport Beach on psychological type. And it was about that time that Stephanie Rogers, who was working with me, and I were getting concerned about the labeling. I remember us introducing in a session this concept of talking about I have preferences for, or I have a pattern, and the dangers of labeling. What we were trying to get at is that people are not fixed. And then it was the whole issue of don't put me in a box. I'm sitting here looking at my bookshelf. That is a bookshelf. It's not anything else. Now, I could turn it on its side and, I don't know, put some things underneath it and make it a table on the back of it, but that's ugly. But it's a bookshelf. So we're human beings, and we're more than a tangible, physical thing that doesn't change and adapt. And even if I took all the shelves out and made it something else, I had to do that to it to change what it was for. So if I say to you, Olivia, you're an INFJ, it is a static thing. That's like saying you're a bookshelf or a lamp. Now, I can make metaphors to the importance of a bookshelf and a lamp, but that's not really the point. It's the paradox of the type pattern in our experience and many years stays the same over time, but the way it expresses over time is different. So that was part of it. The other part of it is there were so many stereotypes about the four-letter types, the E versus I and S versus N and T versus F and J versus P. This was the worst part. I am a thinker. I am a thinking type. Technically, in the Jungian view, that's my pattern. But I'm way more than a thinking type. We just felt like it does harm because it labels people, puts people in a box.
What do you mean by labeling?
By labeling, I think similar to the bookshelf. It's also when we're teaching children to read, we put labels on things so that you know what it is. When you go to the store and buy some fruit, there's a label either on the fruit itself, like an apple, or there's a label on the container that it's in. So the label helps you identify what it is. And that's fine because an apple is an apple, unless it's a variety of apple that's been changed, but that's different. So we wouldn't even call that an apple, we would call it something else. So the big problem with a label is it's limited. It limits you. And if I say I'm an INTP, then you have some understanding of what that means. Somebody else has an understanding of what that means. And then they make assumptions about that, about my behavior, about who I am at my core, really. And some of those might be pretty accurate about what the type patterns, but the type pattern is just a pattern. It just indicates certain characteristics. It can express in a living human being, it can express differently as we develop skills, as we develop different capacities, as we mature. And there's actually, in the Jungian theory of type, there is a developmental process that goes on. There is type development. And we develop within that pattern. It doesn't mean the pattern changes. It's just it becomes richer.
Okay, got it. And I'm thinking about our listeners, because all those notions are clear for you. You work them, you made some research. I am referring to, and I think it's the majority of the people who are looking who they are. This is why they went online or took an assessment. In order to know who they are, not what they prefer, what they have, but more who they are. You were telling that might be harmful to say you are or I am a INFJ, ENTP, INTP, et cetera, or even Enneagram 2, 3, 4, 5. How could you explain to those people that they are looking who they are? That they are maybe wrong thinking like that way.
Well, who you are is really different from what you are. And a noun doesn't tell you who you are. Linda doesn't tell me who I am. I grew up when Linda was a popular name. There were two other Lindas in my small town school with 24 people in the class, three of us. And as individuals, who we are is really different. Now, chances are we had different type patterns, but who we are is not the same thing as the type pattern. And when it says you are that, then it can have a label, a labeling limiting quality. Anyway, so that's the challenge with it. Now, if I may be so brave as to go down a little side trip, saying I am an INTP when I'm really clear about that, or if I wanted to use temperament to say I'm a theorist, that's not quite as bad as saying I'm a thinker or a feeler or a judger or a perceiver, because those indeed are parts, and the parts are not the whole. There's a pattern, and nature is in patterns. The pattern, the fundamental pattern, the essential qualities of the pattern stay the same over time.
What do you mean by patterns? That sounds logical when you talk about it. That sounds beautiful.
Of course it's logical.
Yet we can think a pattern for a quilt, for instance, or when you are knitting, you are using a pattern. Are you referring to that kind of pattern or something different?
Well, a pattern is an arrangement of qualities. So if you have a quilt, I have a quilt in my cupboard, in my linen closet, that my grandmother made for me. That is a double wedding ring quilt. So the pattern of that double wedding ring is these interlocked circles all over there. So a quilt is a quilt. It's a thing. The pattern is a specific arrangement of characteristics. So when we're looking at type, there's a couple of things. Living systems have patterns, and the patterns that describe the essence of it, of what that system does.
A living system? Are we human a living system?
Yes, like plants, animals, people, anything that's living that grows and develops over time. So, okay. As opposed to something that's dead or inanimate. So a quilt is inanimate, right? And so that pattern is there, and you can make variations in it, but it doesn't change itself. So living systems can be understood, and this is the work of Fritjof Capra.
Fritjof Capra is a physicist and author who believes we can understand living systems. He sees everything as interconnected, like a web of life. In his book, The Web of Life, he talks about how everything in life, from biology to society, is linked. He challenges traditional views and introduces a new way of thinking about life and its complexity.
He said, if you want to understand a living system, you have to understand four things. First of all, pattern. What is the pattern of the system? And in order to understand the pattern of the system, you have to identify the essential qualities of the pattern. What makes it what it is? For example, a human being has certain essential physical qualities, various body parts, various systems within us that are usually configured in much the same way. And a system is a configured, meaning that things are arranged in certain ways, such that they, if it's a living system, it's animated, it moves, it changes, not like the quilt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the living system has a pattern. And there are processes that help maintain that pattern. So processes are activities that go on to serve that pattern. Processes can change over time. Volume turned up on one, come back down on another. In a plant, the processes are, and I'm not a biologist or botanist, but there's nutrients come from the soil, and there's water goes into the soil, comes up through the roots, comes up, nutrients go out, and carbon dioxide is taken in and oxygen's exchanged. Those are the processes, those are activities that maintain a plant. If you stop one of those processes, the plant will die or not work the same way, if you will. And then there is structure. And the structure is the embodiment of the pattern. Structure of the plant is the stem and the roots and the leaves, and then perhaps a flower or something that produces seeds, right? And so that's the physical embodiment of the pattern. And there's a fourth thing, which for living systems, there's purpose. Like the purpose of a stalk of wheat is to produce this grain. And that grain then feeds others and their different aspects of plants. I'm a little out of my field here, but anyway, mm-hmm. just to try to give it a little more concreteness. So we have, as human beings, we have tons of physical processes that we can describe. And now they can do with neuroscience, and I'm not an expert in this, but they can actually track how things are happening in the brain and in the whole neurology of the system. So those are the aspects of a living system. As human beings, there's the physical being, and we sort of artificially take apart the physical being and look at that separate from the sense of self kind of being, mm-hmm. or the spiritual side of the being, the emotional side, whatever that may mean to people these days. It's easy to see the pattern in the human physical pattern. There's the head, shoulders, arms, trunk, legs, feet. Sometimes things happen and the pattern doesn't look like that, but that's atypical. Mm-hmm. So that's the pattern. And we're designed to function that way. I happen to believe, and I think there's evidence to say, that there are less tangible patterns. And we can name some of those less tangible patterns as types. And so a personality type can be described as a pattern of certain essential qualities. And what are those essential qualities? John Beebe has taken a look at Jung's work and created a metaphor for us with the stick figure, the head and the spine and the arms.
John Beebe is a renowned Jungian analyst. He developed an 8-function model of personality that builds upon Carl Jung's theory of psychological types. This model assigns archetypes to each of the 8 cognitive functions, providing a more nuanced understanding of personality and consciousness.
And so we could take the 8 functions that Carl Jung identified and look at what role does that function play in the psyche, using that analogy. So one plays what he calls a heroic role, one plays a good parent role, one plays a forever child role, one plays the anima, or the anima, as I call it, the aspirational role. So that's the basic core pattern, using that lens, that aspect of our personality.
Which is not the whole pattern of a person.
Which is not the whole at all. No, not that at all. And that's a little bit like describing my skeleton.
Okay.
That's a part of my physical pattern or your physical pattern. And then there are muscles. Steve Myers, years ago, talked about muscles and mental muscles and how when we exercise our muscles, you know.
Steve Myers is an independent researcher and writer with expertise in psychological type. He developed the Mental Muscle Diagram Indicator, MMDI, which is an analogy comparing psychological preferences to muscles. The MMDI is a free alternative to the Myers-Briggs type indicator and is designed to provide insights into one's personality preferences.
I've been exercising the last couple of years, and there's a nice little muscle there. Right? I can see this muscle in my arm. I can feel it. Oh, that wasn't there before. Now, I always had a muscle there, but that muscle's much bigger. So it works harder for me than it used to. So I can pick things up in ways that I couldn't pick them up before. But this isn't the whole of me. The muscle in my arm doesn't describe what I mean as a human being, or even as a body. When we look at the 8 functions that Carl Jung described, he was looking at some dynamics. I like calling them dynamics because dynamic means that it's moving. I also like to call them processes. Mm-hmm. So he called them functions. Each of those has a function. It serves a function for us. It does things. If my heroic is introverted thinking. So that's a muscle, as Steve Myers would say, that's really been exercised a lot. Naturally, I tend to take things in, categorize them, find out what fits, compare other things to them, say, oh no, that doesn't fit, we'll throw it away, or we're not going to look at it now, and do this kind of heavy duty internal analysis where my energy is metaphorically speaking, at least in my head. My daughter doesn't have that pattern. She has access to that pattern. It's her aspirational role. And she does it a fair amount. But that's not what she leads with. Not what she just does automatically, like falling off a log. And over the years, it's developed a great deal. Now, granted that she had a father and a mother and a sibling who had the same preferences, INTP. So she was surrounded by that. So she got a little bit of coaching and to see what it looked like. She can fine tune and correct the best of us as she works in the background while I'm teaching, for example. The pattern is that arrangements of things, and the pattern has a theme, which we name. So instead of me having INTP preferences, I identify as someone where you could name the pattern of a designer theorizer. So it has a name, and we're naming something, so it's a noun. That's like finding a pair of shoes that fits me, and we can describe the shoes. We have loafers, we have sandals, we have sneakers or trainers or whatever people call canvas shoes.
You said that a pattern has a theme.
Right.
If we talk about quilt again, there's a theme also. Even the pattern is what makes the quilt, yet old quilts are not the same. And the person quilting chooses a theme, a color. Maybe the theme will be with flowers or different colors. It's just to make it clear that this is why you came with name for those patterns rather than letters.
So I have seen many double wedding ring quilts in my life. None of them look like mine, because quilts in the past, at least, were made with scraps of fabric. So it's whatever was left over from the sewing that somebody was doing. Now you just go buy the fabric.
Yeah, of course.
And I think what I see behind you is a quilt.
It's not,
but it could be.
It could be. Let's say that it could be.
And it's something that's woven in a pattern by choosing these different colors.
Yeah.
But it's not an organic pattern. So patterns have variations. And for example, INTP, there are four variations that Dario Nardi has described. He says patterns are a result of development.
Dario is an award-winning UCLA professor and author who has made significant contributions to the field of personality research. His work combines neuroscience with personality typology, exploring how different brain regions are activated in individuals of various MBTI types.
So you have these patterns, but basically the pattern is the same. So I think there's a saying in the type world about this is the way the language goes, it still names it, but every ENFP is like every other ENFP is not like any other ENFP. So when we're talking about a type name, we just about have to make it a noun to say it's a this, it's a that. And we're talking about the name of the pattern. I think the biggest issue I have is to say I'm an INTP, because that is parts. We don't look at the whole. And the whole is not the sum of the parts.
Are you telling that someone who took the indicator is actually not an INTP, even though the results of the indicator was INTP?
Well, that's another story.
Okay. Okay.
That's the that's the measurement question. But someone who's identified as having an INTP would not look the same as every other INTP, because there are variations on variations. And some of those variations, probably most of them, I believe, are coming from our life experiences and how we've developed. Like, I was trained in temperament first. So there are four temperament patterns. And then when David Kersey looked at those, he found that they related to the Myers-Briggs types in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So four of each of the 16 personality type patterns clustered in certain ways to relate to each temperament pattern. What you say about a temperament, or I call it an essential motivator pattern, needs to be true for all of the variations. So you can't say a whole lot. And you have to be careful because sometimes, but that may be another podcast or topic, because sometimes you're describing something quite differently. So you're trying to get at what is the essence, what are the essential qualities of the pattern.
And that brings us to the close of the first part of that series. To summarize, using phrases like "my preferences are" or "I have a pattern" provides more flexibility and space for individual nuances. It acknowledges the dynamic nature of human beings. People aren't like objects. As people grow and change, how they express themselves can adapt and evolve. When you say, "I am an INTJ," it unintentionally acts like a rigid label, potentially limiting your understanding and growth. The statement might lead to assumptions and stereotypes about traits associated with INTJ and could hinder the appreciation of your individual complexities. That's why it's preferred to talk about having particular personality patterns or preferences. It provides more room to account for life experiences, development, and the unique variations within each personality type. Also, the notion of personality preferences underlines that while certain tendencies might be more inherent, it doesn't preclude the capacity to develop or utilize other traits when necessary or desired. In the second part of this series, you will discover Linda's special way of naming the 16 personality themes. Don't miss this episode, as her unique method brings a holistic perspective to your practice and enhances your ability to discuss different personality types. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed this discussion, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a rating and review to help others find the show. Remember to subscribe if you don't want to miss next week's episode. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Beyond Personality Types. Thanks again for tuning in. We are Olivier Caudron and Linda Behrens. Stay curious and eager to learn until we meet again in our next episode.